Welcome back to Business Resolutions with your host, Jorge Gonzalez.
Well, welcome back. I'm with Tito Alvarez. Welcome back to Business Resolutions. So, Tito, the question I had for you is, how did Heineken come into the company, and what did you do as you were heading the liquor division?
Well, like, the best I can remember is that when I came from Spain in 1947, I walked into the warehouse and I saw a tremendous stockpile of Heineken. And at that time, the head of the department of the liquors division was Santiago Bayron, may he rest in peace. And Santiago, at that time, we were selling around 600,000 cases. And when I ended up as head of that department, when he resigned and he went for retirement, I remember I put it up and it was 1 million cases. At that time, Mr. Heineken himself invited myself and my wife, Irma, to go to Heineken and celebrate that in Amsterdam, in Holland.
And incidentally, Heineken is a privately owned company. I mean, it's a family-owned company.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not a public company.
Absolutely.
It's all over the world, I think, except for Coca-Cola.
That's right.
You find it in every place. I mean, in Africa, the smallest places in Africa, and it's not publicly owned. It's owned by one family.
But Jorge, do you know something? We never wanted to import Heineken from any of the surrounding islands, like Curaçao or any place like that. We just wanted to have the real McCoy, right, Mr. Van Monchen used to say that in New York. You know, I went one time to New York, and I said, I want to speak to Van Monchen's son. And he got hold of the telephone, and he said, no, you want to speak to the real McCoy, you know, the real McCoy. And I am the real McCoy. And I remember Mr. Van Monchen at that time, he invited me to go to a restaurant, and when he got out of the restaurant, he didn't have any money. So he said, give me some money to pay my taxi and be able to get out of this place and give it to the girl to take care of the goat and all that.
So some of the richest people in the world.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He was a character, you know. But then you leave, you bring it from 600,000 to a million, and Luis was working with you in the division, and you move on to president
of Mendes &
Company, and you leave Luis in charge of vice president in charge of the liquor division. And what does Luis accomplish, with Heineken, and where does it stand today in terms of
Luis at that time? When the years passed by, you know, he went as high as 6 million cases. That was something unbelievable for me, you know. I said that, my God.
So where did they didn't invite him to Amsterdam? Where did they invite you to? I mean, you know, Cape Town.
They took the entire sales team to Amsterdam.
Oh, not just you. Now they brought the whole sales team.
Of course.
But they didn't bring your lawyer, you know. What kind of a friend is this?
We have that trip pending.
And where does Heineken stand now in terms of market share? I know in this anniversary banquet that you had, and you had the Heineken person, I know that you're number two or three in terms of market share or per capita sale. Where do you stand in terms of Heineken, both with respect to the total cases and what's happened, and with respect to your market share?
Okay, we're the number two territory for Heineken in terms of market share, as Jean-Francois mentioned during his trip to Puerto Rico. Right now, in Puerto Rico, we have close to a 17.5 market share, which for a premium beer in a light beer market, European flavored taste in a light beer market, a beer in bottles, in a can that is 75% cans, and then a very expensive beer in a market that's going very much difficult economic conditions, we are very happy and very proud of what we have done. And then for me, yes, the volume has eroded a bit, but for me the most important thing, when we look at the brand attributes and the brand equity, Heineken's position in Puerto Rico as it pertains to brand strength is the strongest of any other place in the world. And that's confirmed by our research, and it's also confirmed by their research. So I guess it was obvious by the respect and the friendship that we have, not only as commercial partners, but in a personal character, we have profound respect for each other, and that has made the relationship very, very profitable and very, very enjoyable for both parties.
And Luis, one thing, you know, that has stood out besides the market share that you achieved with Heineken, something that stands out is the Heineken Jazz Fest. And reading through the book and knowing a little bit about you, but I learned a lot more by reading about the book, because I was surprised with a couple of things. I mean, you studied Maristas and then Notre Dame, and then decided to go to Berklee School of Music. So you almost like, and you were in finance and marketing, et cetera, in Notre Dame. So you go to Berklee School of Music. You spent a couple years there, and you're still very involved. I think you're on the board of Berklee, et cetera. What happened there? I mean, you kind of got rebellious and thinking of becoming a musician, or
no? I didn't get rebellious at that time. I got rebellious much earlier.
Yeah, Tito is laughing. I don't think he agrees.
No, I agree.
Okay. Go ahead.
When I graduated from Notre Dame, Tito goes to Tito and Irma go to the graduation, and Tito.
I always love you. I always refer to your father as Tito.
Yeah, that's right. That's
now, where did that? How does that arrive? Just because of the business?
I think it's part of the business environment that we are discussing here today, and basically because he works for me, and it sounds kind of funny when you say, "Papi, what do you think about this major decision that we have to make?"
Okay. You know, anyway, I interrupted you. I tend to do that. I think people criticize me for that, but you were saying, in terms of you go to Berklee, it wasn't rebellious. Why did you go to Berklee
and
start music?
I always been in music because my house has been always a very musical household. Tito is a great singer, like every other Spaniard, especially they come from Asturias.
I used to.
You still are. And my mother was a piano player all her life. So music was very much a part of our family. When we used to go to see Los Chavales de España, even when I was in my mother's womb, she would take me to hear the Chavales de España. So I've been blessed with having a great family, but music has been one of those elements.
Okay.
But I've been a musician since I was 6 years old. I started with the accordion, then I went to play the keyboards, the organ. When I was in high school, I have a musical group called Combo Cabaza. And it was five of us. We did a lot of parties, and by the end of my senior year, I have a pretty sizable deposit account in the bank.
Tremendous.
Very good.
People would call me and say, "Are you going to go to that party? Who's inviting you to that party?" I don't want no girl to invite me. I want them to call me so I can play the gig. I was more into playing the gig than to going to the party. I always wanted to do music, and the opportunity came. I went to Berklee. But I went to Berklee knowing that God did not give me the talent to be a great musician. He gave me something much more useful. The awareness that I did not have the talent to be a great musician.
So what you did, you learned some depth. You got some depth in terms of music
to go to Berklee to learn as much as I could because of my personal enjoyment of music, not because I wanted to do a career in music. And my instrument was bass, but my major was arranging and composition, which is what I always like to do and what I do a lot.
And that was in the 80s.
I was in 1981 when I finished Notre Dame. I went to Berklee.
Okay, and then Heineken Jazz Fest starts in 92, 93.
Well, we started sponsoring.
No, in other words, you weren't thinking of something like a jazz fest at that time.
Of course not.
Yeah. So Heineken Jazz Fest, how does that arise?
I start working in Mendes in July 1995, and 2 years after that, they start a small jazz fest in San Juan, and Heineken becomes sponsors because of my relation with Heineken and with the music, and especially with jazz. And I think there's a lot of, it's not because Luis likes Heineken and Luis likes jazz. I think there's a lot of strong correlation, especially in the psychographics of the jazz lover and the Heineken drinker. Jazz is not music for everyone. It's not a commercial music style. It's not salsa or merengue or pop or rock or baladas. The same way that Heineken is not a mainstream product. There's a degree of sophistication without being pretentious.
Okay.
But when we do a Heineken Jazz Fest, I mean, a great night, we would have 4,000 people. You do a salsa concert, you have 14,000 or 20,000 people. So there was a lot of correlations between that. So we started as a sponsor, and then 4 years after that, I realized it was more effective for me to produce the whole thing. And that's the only thing I produce. I'm not a producer. I don't get involved in
anything. And this combination of jazz with Heineken, is that worldwide or is that mostly Puerto Rico?
Well, I think the only place where the importer-distributor is in charge of the production of the event is in Puerto Rico. But Heineken certainly sponsors, they had sponsors also in the past, like the Umbria Jazz Festival used to be a Heineken property for many years. Now they're a secondary sponsor, they're involved, but also the Jazz Festival in Vitoria, Spain, or the San Sebastian, they're very much targeted by Heineken, as well as other musical events in other styles. So it's not only jazz that they do, but this is the only place where the importer, distributor, it's also the producer and the owner of the event.
Okay, well that's a fascinating story. And it's a very prestigious event. I'm going to take a break. We'll be back, and I'm going to cover another dimension of Luis Alvarez, the pilot.